Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? This is Seth Green, and you are listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark, and I am so hot, I would desperately like a glass of water. Please, please, give me some water.
This is Cindy Preston, and I'm with Mark on Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Melissa Peterman from CMT's The Singing Bee and the television show Reba, and I have to tell you, I just have to get it off my chest, I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi there. This is Faith Roscoe from General Hospital. You're listening to Mark on Somewhere in Vegas. And you better watch out. We know how to find you if you're not listening.
Hi, this is Shannon Egan from Whippet. And I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hey, this is Lee Allen Baker with Somewhere in Vegas, talking with Mark with a Q.
This is Courtney Cronin. You're listening to Somewhere in Vegas with your host, Mark. And I would make sure to listen every week because he's a sure bet.
Hey, this is the Money Man, Eddie Money. I got two tickets to Paradise. And it's, you know what? It's Somewhere in Vegas. And what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Hi, this is Crystal Kale, and I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Terry Nunn from Berlin, and you're listening to Mark Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Miracle Laurie from Joss Whedon's Dollhouse. There are three flowers in a vase, and I'm listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Erin Hill, and you are listening to Mark on Blog Talk Radio and Somewhere in Vegas. Mark is a great guy.
Hi, this is Sean Pulaski. I'm still trying to figure out Mark Pico's sexuality, but I know you're listening to Somewhere Live in Vegas.
Here you go, Mark. I'm sorry. I thought you were she. I'm sorry. Get out of the tent. Let's get out of here.
Hey, this is Lance and Anna from Free Radio. And Anna?
And you're listening to Somewhere in Vegas.
Yes.
My favorite.
You know, that's usually what happens with me. I go to Vegas and I get lost, and so I end up somewhere in Vegas.
Somewhere in Vegas.
But right. I just don't know where it is.
Not quite sure.
Yeah, word.
Get ready. It's going to be hot. It's in Vegas. Check out Mark. Be there or be square.
Welcome, everybody, to Somewhere in Vegas here on BlogTalkRadio.com. I'm Mark the Q. I'm your host. Very, very loaded show today. It's been a while since we've had a really loaded show. At the top of the next hour, we're going to have one of our favorite guests, Lana Kinnear, on with us, a.k.a. Lana Starr. We'll be talking about WOW Wrestling coming back to major television over Access TV. We'll be talking a little bit about her and some of the other stuff that she's been doing. She's been a really, really busy gal. So we'll tap her at the top of the next hour. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking to Miles Tegmeyer, who's going to talk a little bit about his Emmy-nominated show. This guy has basically created his own show with very little funding. He funded it on his own. Nobody else has helped him. We're going to be interested to see how it was just to fund his own show and to be able to get to the Emmy stage. But first up, I have a very special guest. If you guys are fans of American Horror Story, she's done an absolute great job there. And again, she's been nominated for Emmys. She's nominated for Emmy right now for her show. I believe it is Control Alt Delete. You guys can check that out on Facebook.com as well. Very talented actress, and we'll get her on right there. Naomi Grossman, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hi, how's everything going with you?
Can you hear
been busy?
Me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Pretty busy, yeah. Okay, good.
I mean, it's great to be able to see it. Obviously, your show is obviously not, not major network, but it seems like, it seems to be the trend that, a lot of these producers are starting to do their shows under different platforms, different formats on the internet as well. How is it for you to be a part of the show?
Yeah, I mean, it's the Wild West. It's, the internet is the future, and, for old folks like me, if it's not on, one of the three networks, I mean, I don't know, gone are the days that, it's got to be on NBC, must-see TV to be seen. The kids, all they care about is YouTube and, Vimeo and Vine, who knows. I'm trying to keep up myself. But anyway, I think it's really awesome that the Television Academy which is sort of known for kind of being old and stodgy, is ahead of the trend here and is, you know, acknowledging where television and is going, and that is the internet. So I think it's pretty awesome.
And there's a freedom. I mean, I'm assuming this is perfectly true with you as well, but there's a freedom for producers to be able to kind of carve their own vision. The old school way was you had to go through the network, and the network, you know, had notes, and the networks, you know, sometimes watered down topics. And especially in this show right here, you can't kind of water down what you guys are talking about. So there's a lot of freedom there in terms of the creators as well. I mean, how was it for you for being an actress, coming from a network show like American Horror Story to coming to something like this where the producers do have a lot more control?
Right. Well, you know, obviously control, I'm sorry, American Horror Story is no, you know, by an angel either. Like it's still cable. And it still really pushes the envelope. And in that particular case, you know, the producers tend to have pretty much carte blanche with the network just because they can do no wrong. But, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Control of the Lead is an abortion comedy, for lack of, you know, better description. And, yeah, that's just not something that I think, you know, CBS is ready for. So it's great that there's, you know, other platforms out there. And, you know, you don't necessarily have to wait for higher ups who are, you know, afraid about their money and how the messages they're sending. And, you know, if you have a message, you can get it out there even without, you know, needing to jump through all the hoops that, you know, these various networks require you to jump through. So, yeah, again, I think it's really exciting. It's not, you know, this isn't necessarily my axe to grind per se, but, you know, at the same time, I really do appreciate what the creators are doing. I myself have used my own stories of heartbreak and whatnot as my muse creatively. And so, you know, the fact is, this is a topic that is very, you know, important to the producers, creators of the show. And so I think that's really awesome that they're able to, you know, take their heart and turn it into art, you know, or whatever that expression is. I think it's notable.
Yeah. Now, was this something? Was this a project that you were presented with? Was it did the producers have you in mind already for the part, or was it something that you actually auditioned for?
They did. No, I actually share an alma mater with Ronnie Giza, who's one of the producers. And Margaret Katz. I just know through you know, we kind of auditioned for the same role, so. You know, it pays to be nice in Hollywood. You never know. You know, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. And in this case, what would have been my enemy has become a great friend. So, yeah, no, they came to me with the role. I guess, you know, she's pretty insane. She's an abortionado. That is kind of a regular at the clinic. She jokes about, you know, needing a punch card and having her own chair there. And, you know, apparently this is a real lady out there in the world who's just, you know, really into getting abortions. And well, the series is all based on real women's stories. So I think I was blessed with this total freak of a character, and you know, so I'm flattered that they immediately thought of me. I think that's the beauty of like a role like Pepper. You know, I'm obviously a character actress, so whenever anybody thinks of like, well, who in the world could play that? You know, they kind of go to me. They just know that like, there's no matter what, it's not too out there for me. Nothing is.
No.
In fact, go ahead. Sorry. I was just going to say, I guess a spoiler alert, but I recently went out for like a, you know, one-eyed 90-year-old hunchback with, you know, on from 1400s England. And I think, you know, your average 30, 40-something actress might think, you know, do they know I'm not, you know, 90 or hunchback? Or, and in my case, I think, bring it on. Like, that's exactly the kind of part that I can, like, you know, that I can nail like no one else.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I was going to follow up on that in terms of the fact that you're probably having a lot more fun because you're not necessarily typecast. I mean, you have such a wide variety of characters that you can play, you know, and, you know, it's always fun. It's always fun to kind of play different people on and all that as well. I mean, how's that for you to kind of have that ability to be able to play a gal like Pepper and then, you know, play what you had in American Horror Story or play an old 90-year-old one with one eye. How's that for you to do that? And is that kind of what kind of makes it exciting for you to be able to do that? And was that something that, you know, maybe younger, that was kind of what was appealing to you in terms of becoming an actress?
Yes, absolutely. That is 100% my jam. I have very little desire to be myself. I am myself, but, you know, when it comes to, you know, on screen, on stage, I want to be someone else. That's, to me, the whole point. And so, yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I'm disappointed when I go to the movies and I see, I mean, God, it's like pretty much everyone just sort of phoning it in, doing the same roles all the time. And I get it. Like, I mean, Robert De Niro is an amazing, you know, Italian gangster grandpa now. I get it. Like, but wouldn't it be interesting to see him do something else? I think, I mean, I don't know. I'd like to see me as the Italian gangster grandpa. Why not? Bring it on. So.
Yeah, you know.
I love Robert De Niro, so I'm not using him, but I just think he's an example of someone who's kind of gotten stuck, in my mind. I mean, stuck. Let's face it, he's done quite well, so I'm sure he doesn't consider himself stuck. But I know for me creatively, like, I would want more than that, personally.
Yeah, I remember I had Doug Jones on a couple of years ago. I don't know if you're familiar with him. Yeah, I think he played Abraham Sapien in Hellboy, and he's in a very similar spot that you are. He does really some of the more unusual roles, as it were. He's more of a character actor, and you know, and he seems like he has a lot of fun doing it as well. I mean, it's, you know, yeah, you aren't typecast. You can really kind of stretch your mentality in terms of the roles too. I mean, it's interesting just to have that, you know, that's the kind of the creative part of the thing, is to kind of go into your mind and kind of find those kind of quirky, weird things in your mind to kind of inspire you to do some of these roles. I mean, I'm pretty sure, you know, that's, you know, your process is very similar, where, you know, you get to examine certain parts of your personality.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that was really the challenge with Pepper, is like, we have nothing in common. I mean, she's monosyllabic. I use big words. What can I say? I mean, you know, in that regard, I really had to find the things that we do have in common, which are, you know, we both have a big heart, you know. that was the challenge there. But yeah, I don't know. If you ever see me just being myself, then I don't know. Please call me out on that, because that's what I don't want.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about your background too, because I'm kind of intrigued. You said that you the role came for you knowing the producers at your alma mater. I believe that is Northwestern. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
Yeah, out of Chicago. I mean, you know, were you, you know, did you go into college thinking that you wanted to become an actor?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I went into, like, nursery school thinking I wanted to be an actor. I was a theater major there, as was Roni. I think, that said, we didn't actually go at the same time. I'm older. But Northwestern has an amazing alumni network, and that's just something I never even thought of as I was applying. I mean, I was, you know, one of those total nerds in school that was just like, all I cared about was the U.S. News and World Report, and, you know, which school had the best theater program, and that's where I was going to go. And sure enough, it was the one place I applied, and I got in, so I got lucky. I was actually living abroad as an exchange student my senior year when I applied, so I remember, you know, promising my mom, like, I sent the fax, I think it went through, you know, you can tell, you can imagine, she was a total maniac about it, but, you know, got in and did my time there, kind of oblivious to, you know, Hollywood. Once I finally moved out here, that's when I realized the real value of that education. I mean, obviously, I'm thankful to have, you know, learn stuff, but at the end of the day, it's amazing. Like, I mean, I know people who went to USC, UCLA, you know, local schools here in Los Angeles, and they all say, man, if I wanted to know somebody in Hollywood, I should have gone to Northwestern. And it's true. I mean, it's rare that there's not a room, you know, a casting that I walk into where there's not somebody who's, like, somehow involved, and, you know, you could change your life. And it's amazing. I mean, you look at, like, I don't know, just late night TV alone. I actually was in school with Seth Meyers. He was a year ahead of me. And of course, Stephen Colbert went there. I mean, it's, who knew? Pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, I
actually,
mean,
Charlotte
I
Ray.
Graduated.
We just watched Charlotte Ray. She's also a prestigious alum.
Yeah, and, you know, I graduated from Montana State University, and we have a really strong alumni network in terms of that as well. We don't have very many actors, so a lot of them are behind-the-scenes people. So if you ever hear any Montana State alumni, you're usually behind the camera doing something. But it's interesting just to have a strong network, you know, and to have that alumni network going for you. It's great to be able to have those opportunities as well. Obviously, Chicago, really good town for, you know, for acting, especially, you know, Second City's out there as well. I mean, did you get an opportunity to do any improv outside of Northwestern, or was it mainly just Northwestern?
I less improv and more kind of that underground comedy that Chicago is also well known for. I was in a couple shows in downtown Chicago. Shannon Doherty Shoots a Porno. I played Tori Spelling, as well as Cannibal Cheerleaders on Crack, which also starred Alexander Billings, who people may know now from the show Transparent. I remember, you know, every weekend I'd head down on the L from school, and I was kind of like the bad girl who'd go and, you know, show her boobs on stage, for laughs, of course. I remember actually one of the fraternities having a date party there once and thinking, wow, this is awkward. I can actually say, like, the entire fraternity's, like, see me naked. What was even more awkward was, of course, asking them if I could, you know, jump in the bus with them home afterwards. Chicago's a great city for that, for, you know, comedy and theater. It's not so great for just living outside. I personally love, you know, I like going outside. I don't know, I'm kind of crazy that way. So I needed to get, you know, to sunny Southern SoCal as soon as possible. I survived the four winters and was out.
Yeah, just coming from Montana, it's a buster too. I mean, there's, you know, I think last winter we had a, couple feet worth of snow. But being in Vegas, I mean, it's great during the winter, During the summer, it's a little bit much.
I can only imagine.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Wanted to ask you, I don't know why this question is just popped in my head, but do you sing at all?
Yeah. I mean, listen, when you're a theater nerd in Denver, Colorado, which is where I grew up, you have to. You have to be able to sing, you have to be able to dance, you have to do it all. Because pretty much all that was coming through there was, Grease, Pippin, you name it, sort of musical theater staples. That said, nobody's going to, turn me on in their car, you know what I mean? You don't want to, listen to me, out of choice, I'm generally sort of the quirky neighbor or wacky granny or something that's sort of cast to just be able to sell a song. I think that's my gift as far as musical theater goes. I can sell a song, but you're not, I'm not like an Adele that you actually want to listen to. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Same thing with dancing.
Yeah.
I'm gonna fool you that I'm a good dancer because I jazz hands and but I'm not actually technically I would be busted on Dancing with the Stars. Although I'm gonna get points for pizzazz,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Trying to think of what it would be called. But anyway, it's nice to have those in the back pocket, but obviously, those necessarily aren't your fortes as much as your great acting is, and like I said, it's kind of been proven time and time again as well. With American Horror Story now with the Emmy nomination, the roles obviously seem to be rolling in for you as well. How's it been for you? First of all, hearing that you got nominated for an Emmy, and what was the story behind that? Did you get a call or whatever? And just how has that and maybe American Horror Story kind of affected your life in terms of advancing your career?
Oh, gosh. Well, to answer the question about the nomination, I happened to have been invited to some folks' house. They were going to be basically broadcasting the announcement, and I'm kind of a technophobe. I can barely figure out how to, turn on my own TV. So I figure, better to go somewhere else where somebody else can worry about that. So sure enough, I showed up. I was, in my baseball hat and yoga pants. I was not expecting this. But it was 8 in the morning, I figure where else did I have to be but in bed? So I rolled out of bed just in time and got there to find out the news, which was thrilling, obviously. In fact, somebody actually happened to catch me on their phone, which I then put on Instagram. So if people want to follow me and check that out there, you can see it's very exciting, very exciting. And of course, I have to the people that organized that gathering, the FYC Underdogs, with a group of people like me, old people, who are basically don't necessarily have a big studio backing them and who kind of came together to support one another, which, I really appreciate. As far as how it and or American Horror Stories changed my life, it goes both ways. I don't know. I still see a boop. It's put me in a really good mood, all the time. I would say definitely Horror Story was a game changer for sure. For the longest time, I couldn't even, get arrested in Hollywood, and now, gee whiz, I casting directors actually look up from their phone when I enter the room. That's That's really saying something. If anybody's seen La La Land, that's real. Like, I've totally acted my pants off, like, while people are, you know, ordering lunch. But, and I mean, half the time I don't even have to audition. That's awesome, because I'm actually not a great auditioner. I don't know, like, it's everything from, that day I became number one on IMDb, which, for people who don't know, that's the International Movie Database that sort of is a ranking of everyone in Hollywood and out of Hollywood, for that matter. And, you know, for somebody who wasn't really all that cool in school, being number one, you know, on top of Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie and, you know, everybody else in the world, that meant something to me. Opening my computer and seeing, like, my mug, you know, tattooed on fans' limbs, that meant something to me. Driving by an electrical box and seeing my face as, you know, Pepper for President, plastered around town, and that meant something to me. So, it's more, you know, it's, if anything, it's nice to have that validation, because for so long, I mean, my God, I got my SAG card on my 15th birthday. It wasn't until I was 37, that is 22 years later, that I actually made, you know, SAG insurance and was allowed to go to the doctor. So being able to finally, you know, get this sort of affirmation from my peers in the Television Academy and just, you know, fans and viewers in general, is an awesome thing, because I feel like finally people are starting to see this thing that I've always known about myself. I always knew, like, that this was my, you know, that this was my calling, and it was painful that I seemed to be the only one that knew it for a while, and I'm sure, you know, people, even my own mom, probably doubted me, but now she doesn't, and in fact, no one does, and that's probably the greatest gift of all, you know, being able to quit that day job and just do what I want to do and not worry. Like, just know that, you know, that it's, I'm not the flash in the pan. Like, there will be a next role. Like, I'm going to make insurance. Like, that's a lot, you know, for an artist who isn't able to rely on a nice, you know, 9 to 5 and pension and benefits, you know. Just being able to kind of trust yourself that you're doing the right thing and the universe will provide.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of actors come to Hollywood and just get their hearts broken, and you know, don't stick with it as long as you have, you know, and waiting for that. With that one break, and sometimes that break doesn't happen overnight. Sometimes it doesn't happen in 2 years. It doesn't happen in 3 years. In your shot, it was 22 years where that shot has been, and that just tells you how much determined and how determined you are, you know, to make it in there. So it tells me something really good about your character, just that you're willing to stick in there and really kind of want to live your dream and work hard for that dream as well. And you know, not to give up, you know, if you really have a passion for it, then you just keep on going. So, I mean, that's just inspiration.
Well,
for
I don't know if that means I'm just stubborn, like, or just that passionate. I mean, I do believe that, believe me, I looked around, I was like, there's got to be something else for me in this life. Like, the universe is, but get it. Like, I'm not supposed to be an actor. Like, I cannot act. And so, and I mean, I think there's a reason for that. I think it's hard as a developmental actor, that is somebody who's just, you know, first starting out. They're typically sort of relegated to these tiny little roles that are, you know, above background, but they're basically there just to support the lead. So, you know, the waitress that offers the star, you know, fries with his burger kind of thing. And, you know, those were roles that I was just never going to get. Like, I'm kind of big. Not physically, of course, I'm 5 feet, but I bring a lot, as we know, from, you know, Pepper to Lorna in Control Alt Delete. I'm kind of over the top character, and that's basically what you don't want of those developmental, you know, co-star parts. Those roles are actually meant to fade away. And so, you know, I just wasn't getting them. And so I think Pepper was this really just like perfect storm of a role, in that she was small enough that they were willing to take a chance on me. I mean, let's face it, you're not going to give Jessica Lange the role of Pepper. I mean, you're paying a premium for that face. You don't want to cover in prosthetics. But at the same time, you know, she was big enough that I was able to really make something of her. So that was an awesome break for me. And I'm just forever grateful for Pepper and for Schlitzie and Ryan Murphy.
Yeah, now, my next guest is in queue right now, so let's kind of wrap things up here, because we could go on for another hour or so. Anything for me? What? Yeah, and well, first of all, I mean, any projects coming up for you?
Yeah, ink's not dry on some stuff, so you'll just have to, you know, follow me, and when things will be revealed, they will be revealed. But yes, I've just done a handful of indie films, mostly horror. So, you know, keep your eyes peeled for, Zombie Ted, Bite Me, The Initiation, Painkillers, One Bedroom, The Lurker, The Portal. I've been busy. What can I say?
So. Yeah. Could we expect you to see you at Sundance next year?
Sundance? You know, possibly. I mean, any one of those films, to my knowledge, don't necessarily have distribution yet. So, Sundance is a great place for them to be. I sure hope so. I've never actually been, so it's on my list.
And then finally, kind of where can people follow you on social media?
Oh, I'm at Naomi W. Grossman across all platforms.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Definitely when we get some more information about some of the projects that are coming up and their release dates, definitely. Well, I would love to have you back on the show. Like I said, we could talk on for another hour or so. Congratulations on all of the success. I'll be pulling for you for the Emmy. Best of luck to you in the future, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
No problem, Naomi. We'll see you on the social media platforms.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Naomi Grossman, everybody. You guys can check her out. Naomi W. Grossman, really an interesting individual in terms of her acting career, and really stuck to it. You know, it's really great to be able to see. So speaking about sticking to it, our next guest basically self-financed his Emmy-nominated series, which was really, really great, and he's been busy through, you know, doing as all his actors as well. His series is called Broken. You guys can check out that as well, on certain platforms. We have Miles Techmeyer on it with us right now. How are you doing, Miles?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How's it been since the nomination? How did you hear about your nomination?
Oh, it has been the best experience that I've ever had. It's been such a joy, and I'm living it, and I'm just excited, and I'm letting myself just live in this moment right now. And I actually found out, a little bit different than Naomi, I was alone, and I was on an airplane. And it was also, as she said, very, very early in the morning. I boarded my flight at 6:30 a.m. Nominations came out between 8:30 and 9 a.m., and so everyone around me was asleep, but of course I had to buy Wi-Fi. I was on my iPad. I kept updating the list because the live stream was not working. And then as soon as I saw my name on that list, my mouth just dropped. I started to laugh and smile and cry a little bit. And I'm sure everyone around me who was trying to sleep was looking over thinking that I was absolutely insane. But I loved it.
Now, the question is, were you in coach or were you in first class?
Oh, no, of course I was in coach. I was flying to my sister's wedding. I was being the officiant for her.
So you were the one that was marrying them?
Yeah. I got ordained online, as one does when they're asked to marry someone. And then I flew out to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina to officiate the wedding. And I had a layover in Atlanta. And so it wasn't until I landed in Atlanta that I was actually able to turn my phone back on, get all of my notifications, and then call my mom. She was the first person that I called. And then hearing her just being so excited and saying, oh, we're so proud of you. And I guess that she was jumping up and down for joy when she found out that. And hearing that just made me cry even more and smile and laugh. And that was when I was walking to the airport. So if I felt weird and crazy in the plane, I can only imagine what people thought I was doing wandering through the Atlanta airport.
Yeah, and that's a big airport, too. I think I've been through it once or twice. It's great to have that. I'd be screaming at the top of my lungs. I just got nominated for an Emmy. it's great to be able to hear that as well. Are you originally from North Carolina?
No, I'm actually from Minnesota. So I was born and raised in Mendota Heights, Minnesota, which is a suburb of the Twin Cities, being St. Paul and Minneapolis. I grew up there until I was about 17, and then I moved right to L.A. So I grew up doing theater in the Twin Cities, and I started working professionally as an actor in the theater circuit at 8, and then I did a bunch of commercials, short films, industrial videos, voiceover work, audio narration, radio, that type of stuff, starting from age 9 all the way through 17. And the only reason I stopped working in Minnesota was because I moved to L.A. And when I moved to L.A., that's when I immediately started grinding away here. And as big of a fish in a small pond as I was in Minnesota for those 10 years, I almost had to restart when I came to Los Angeles. And I've been here for about 8 years now. So I really, really understand this struggle. When people say like, oh, the actor's life, it's so hard. It is a struggle. It is. It is a struggle, but it's about perseverance. And that's something that I believe in very strongly. And if you just have the perseverance to see it through, good things will happen. And I'm proof.
Yeah, and Naomi's proof too. I mean, she really grounded it out for 22 years until she got her big break. So, you know, it just goes to show in terms of, you know, perseverance and what she called stubbornness. That's how you kind of go through it. You know, you're gonna get a lot of no's before you get that first yes. So, you know, it's great to be able to see that as well. How was it for you to balance kind of the acting career versus school? Did you get private study or was it just something that you kind of found out to balance?
Well, I actually went to a performing arts high school in Minnesota. So I was in the theater track. Our days were split between half academic, half arts classes. It was called St. Paul Conservatory for Performing Artists. And the whole purpose of that school was to train you in your desired field and then get you out there, get out of school, go work. And you got arts credit for doing plays and productions and films. So that's what I did in high school, and it really prepared me for life as an actor in Los Angeles. But when I came to Los Angeles right out of high school, because I graduated a semester early, I immediately signed up for Glendale Community College. And so I was just in Glendale Community College doing some classes because it's a lot easier to drop out of those classes if I booked any sort of acting work than it would be if I was in a traditional four-year institution or school. Once I finished 2 years at Glendale Community College, it came time to make a decision. Do I stay one more year to get a two-year associate's degree, or do I do a four-year institution for another 2 years, get some sort of degree, and then call it a day? And I did. So I transferred to Cal State Northridge, and then I graduated from there with a communication studies major and an economics minor. So completely unrelated to acting, but I felt that because I had the basis of the conservatory program from high school, and the whole entire time that I'd been in LA, I'd been doing the entire Groundlings program, acting for camera classes, even private coaching for auditions and working too. I felt like I didn't need to dedicate my time to a conservatory program, a BSc, MFA program for music theater or theater. A lot of my friends did that right out of high school. I took the opposite route. And I know people say it's good to have a backup plan, it's nice to have something, but I actually hate that. I hate that saying because I don't want a backup plan. I don't want to use those degrees. And I've been out of school for 4 years now, and I haven't had to use them yet. But they do come in handy, just making me the person that I am today. But I don't want to focus my career based off of my college degrees.
Yeah, I mean, the communication is definitely obviously helps in terms of the acting skills and all that as well. I know a lot of business people that actually take improv classes in order to be a little bit better on their feet in terms of it as well. So, you know, there's kind of an intertangling between the two. I could definitely see that as well. You know, and the groundlings, obviously, you know, there is a lot of, you know, there's a lot of, I don't want to say hype, but there's a lot of, you know, a lot of emphasis in terms of the groundlings program there. And, you know, getting through that program is tough. It's really
oh,
does,
absolutely.
Kind of, you know, it's a more, I'd say almost probably one of the toughest boot camps you can in terms of acting. As I hear from many, many different actors as well. I mean, you know, how was it for you to kind of go through that program, you know, and work your way up and make it to the Sunday show as possible? And, you know, kind of, you know, how was it to kind of go up through that program? And did you, obviously you learned a lot in terms of going through the program.
Yes, 100%. And I actually lied about my age to get into the Groundlings initially because you have to be 18, but I was 17 when I moved out here. So I said I was 18 because I was turning 18 during the first class. So I just, you know, slid that under the rug for now. But I started right away, and I did this a number of years ago. And so the program has changed. Back when I did it, I went through basic and then intermediate, and I had to repeat intermediate. I did not pass my first time. In those two levels, the first one, you have three chances to pass. And if you don't pass the third time, then you're kindly asked to leave the school, go elsewhere. It's just not right for you. So I passed my second time. And then from there on, it was pass fail. And the next level that I went into was actually a 2-year wait. So I didn't even get into the next one until I was 21, I believe. And then that was called Writing Lab. That was a 12-week program. The first 6 weeks, you focus on writing, and then you do a show, and then you start over. You write more sketches and skits and based off of your characters, and you do another show. It's pass-fail. I passed. I waited another 2 years to get into the final level at that point, which was Advanced Writing Lab, and it was the same format. Another 12 weeks, 6 weeks of writing and sketches based on your characters, a show, and then the same thing, writing sketches based on your characters, another show. And from there, there's nothing else left in the school. The only place to go would be an invitation to their Sunday company. And the Sunday company is where the Groundlings pulls their main members from. Now, I was 23 when I completed Advanced Writing Lab, and I was the youngest person in my class by 7 years. Everyone else, there's 12 of us, was at least 30 and above. And a lot of them had already decided that this was the career that they wanted. They wanted to pursue comedy. They wanted to pursue improv or writing. And this was the defining moment that would help them launch their career into that avenue. Whereas I was younger than them, and I had done improv in high school, and I love comedy. And it was just something I was excited to do. And I knew the chances were very slim that I would be invited to join Sunday Company. If I would have been the youngest person since Mikey Day, I believe, to be a Sunday Company member. So I wasn't expecting anything, and I did not get into Sunday Company. But the experience itself was amazing, and I met a lot of great people, and the classes themselves at the Groundlings, I still use those elements in my career today.
Well, speaking of which, I mean, obviously, you know, producing your own show and all that as well, I mean, you have to have some writing capability as well. I mean, obviously, the Groundlings was really helpful in terms of those writing classes as well. But how much did you pick up from the Groundlings versus what you may have done before? Or was writing always something that was kind of natural to you?
You know, I'm not the writer on Broken. I actually approached two of my friends back in May of 2017, so just a little over a year, almost a year and a half ago. And I wanted to create content. And I went to them and I said, guys, the opportunities aren't there for us at this moment, and we're not known talent. We're not off of series. We're not film stars. Let's create our own stuff. Let's create something that we're passionate about, because if you are passionate and excited about something, everyone will be excited and passionate about what you're trying to do and pitch and sell to them. So we did. And so I enlisted the help of two of my friends who I shot a pilot with about 2 years ago, and they were a writer and a DP team. And then it was the two of them who brought in Kylie Malusnik, who then turned out to be my co-executive producer and director of Broken. And then she and I, we took off with this project, and we were in pre-production from the initial conception in May of 2017 all the way through December 2017. We shot for 10 days in January of 2018, ended on, we only shot for 8 days. We had 1 day off. It's crazy to think about that. We shot 10 to 12 pages a day, and it's very aggressive, very ambitious. And then the day after we wrapped, it was in post-production. And it was in post-production from February 2nd all the way up to literally minutes before it dropped online, when we released it online on Friday, April 13th of 2018. And as far as the writing, my friend, he came up with the initial draft, and then the four of us together had input, and then that's how we worked out the writing. My time spent at the Groundlings was improv-based writing, so the sketches that we came up with came out of improv. So it's a little different, since Broken is not a comedy. Broken is a drama, so Broken has a different tone than what I am used to writing.
Yeah, I had Barry Alexander Brown on a month ago, I think. He was over at Cannes with Black Klansmen, and he was talking about how, they had finished shooting Black Klansmen, I think, in December, and then they got the invite to be able to show it at Cannes. So he had roughly about 2 to 3 weeks to edit the film, to get it absolutely completely done for inclusion into Cannes. And
wow.
It's just amazing. It's just amazing to see how quickly content can be produced nowadays. And I was talking to him about it. It's like, back in the day when he was doing a lot of Spike Lee's earlier stuff, he said, like, we had like months upon months to be able to do content. And nowadays, you can go into the digital editor and just get everything kind of done relatively quickly, except that, you have to do, obviously colorization and, just work through it. But at least it's a lot quicker than it is now. So, I mean, that's obviously a relief, especially with a small budget like you guys were working with. Nowadays, you can get a decent editor for a decent price and just, kind of bang out, as long as you have a good quality quality storyline and a good quality sound and good quality somewhat good quality video, you can really pump up something on a very limited budget. How was it for you to kind of go through that process? And obviously, yeah, that's some things you had to keep in consideration being a producer, with having such a tight budget. I mean, how was it for you to kind of produce this on such a tight budget and just to know that those opportunities were there to actually make a great product without having very much money?
Well, I am also a huge proponent of being open and willing to learn. And so I truly believe that if you surround yourself with people who know what they're doing and they're good at it, you can learn something from them. And I made sure that everyone who was associated with our project was good at what they did, and they were also willing to learn. But not only that, I learned from them. So we made it a point to pay everyone on our crew, because they were already doing us a favor by being there. And some of them were either friends, referrals, or just favors. So it was important to us that they were compensated. And so I was actually the only person on set besides our unpaid volunteer PAs who did not receive compensation. But this is something that I was willing to do because, one, I invest my own money into it. And then, two, it was my passion project. So this was the story that we felt really needed to be made. And like I said before, because we were so passionate about it, the initial four of us, that's how we got other people attached to it. People who are either bigger in their field, bigger as a supervising producer or as a cinematographer or even as a first AD. We attracted these people because we were so passionate about it. We are not well-known, notable filmmakers. We were all young, and this was basically the first large-scale operation that we were all undertaking on our own. And so the opportunity for a studio or a network to back us with that type of budget just was not an option. And if you think it is, that's great to think about, and you can be a dreamer, but we were based in reality, and we wanted to create content that we were passionate about, so we made it work. We made what we had work at the level of a studio budget. And that's also, I think, a sign of a good producer, if I'm going to toot my own horn, because this was my first time executive producing. And being able to allocate those funds accordingly was a learning process for me as well. But again, I had people talking to me and giving me advice and helping me out because they were believed in it because I did. And we shot 90% of Broken in my director Kylie's dad's house in Norco, California. So that saved us money on location fees and permits and everything because we only had one central location. We built a full apartment. So we built my character Liam's apartment in his house. We built the other character Chloe's studio apartment. And we also built Darlene's therapist office all in his house. But we also had that allowed us to then hire a professional lighting crew, and that allowed us to bring on a professional post house. And it was just those decisions that really elevated Broken from any other short form series or even web series that people talk about. I think for the longest time, people, when I would say what I'm doing, and I would say like I'm creating a short form series about mental illness, it's called Broken. People would be like, oh, that's so nice. Like, that's so cute. You're getting a bunch of your friends together. You're filming on your iPhone. Good for you. And they didn't really get it. And that was never our intention. Our intention was to create something impactful. And we didn't spend a lot of money on marketing or even viral marketing because once we found out about the short form category within the Emmys, we knew that that would be the ultimate form of marketing. Because before we had any nominations for Broken, like I just said, we would say, oh, I just shot this thing. Would you like to watch it? People are like, oh, yeah, that's nice. Now we can say, oh, hey, I just shot this short form series about mental illness that has two primetime Emmy nominations. That perks people's ears up. So that in itself has already sparked the conversation that we wanted to ignite on the topic of mental illness.
And I was talking to Naomi about this, about her series, the fact that, you know, there are so many outlets now that where producers don't have to worry about, you know, a network or, you know, or a studio having to say what they like and what the audience, what they think the audience likes and all that as well. These producer, you know, created content, you're really wide open to what you can talk about and what you feel the audience should need to know or would enjoy. And obviously, you know, with the Emmy nomination, that, you know, that kind of, you know, hinges into the fact that, you know, times are changing where maybe the networks don't know everything, you know, where, you know, producers like yourself are actually bringing out some really good content and really kind of innovating what television is now. And it doesn't necessarily have to be on a network. It can be online. It could be on Netflix. It could be on Hulu. It could be, you know, anywhere that you were at your heart's content and still be a great series. I mean, having the opportunity to be able to produce this and to be able to have so much passion for it, what does it mean to you to have this platform where you could just show your content, you know, unfiltered, especially considering that the series is about mental illness and kind of almost is kind of more being a little bit more truthful in terms of what the content is. What does that mean to you and, you know, to be able to put out a series like this and have the opportunity to have so much control over it?
Oh, it's everything. And the way that content is being created has changed so drastically over the course of 10, 5, even 2 years, even 3 years, because this short form category within the Academy didn't exist 4 years ago. It's only been around for 3 years. This is the third year that it's been around. But regardless of that, having any platform to get your content out there is amazing. And as we are seeing, people are creating things that wouldn't necessarily reach the mainstream audience of Middle America, where I'm from. I'm from Minnesota. I don't think that people necessarily want to get home from work and watch some really heavy stuff like this. They like their Law and Orders or CSI, their Big Bang Theory. But then it's the online version that is allowing filmmakers to create truly meaningful content. And with mental illness, the reason we settled on mental illness was because a lot of people don't understand the difference between mental health and mental illness. I thought they were interchangeable. They're not. Mental health is something everyone has. There's nothing you can do about that. Whereas mental illness affects people very specifically. It affects either the way people think, feel, behave, or even interact with others. So it is a disorder. So the topic of mental health and mental illness is not readily seen in the mainstream, I would say, media or primetime content. But allowing us to create our own things and just get it online wherever we could. We put ours on Vimeo, even though we were not affiliated with Vimeo. And then we also hosted on our own website. And then we were directing traffic towards there. And now that we have 2 Emmy nominations, we received one for Outstanding Actor in a Short-Form Comedy or Drama Series for myself, and then also Outstanding Actress in a Short-Form Comedy or Drama Series for Lee Garlington. And we are the only 2 actors in this nomination period who are both nominated from the same show in the short-form category. So that alone is sparking interest on mental health and mental illness, because once they hear that this show has received 2 of the highest honors of television, that's drawing people's attention. And so it's doing exactly what we wanted it to do.
You know, and what does it mean? I mean, just your, you know, this role, I mean, was this, when you talked to the writers, was this role something that you had in mind in terms of it, or was it something that your friends had an idea about and brought that character to you?
Sure. So Liam suffers from schizophrenia within Broken. I do not have any personal experience with schizophrenia in my life. I don't have any family members who suffer from schizophrenia, but I do have family members who suffer from mental illness on both sides of my family. Also, I found out that more people than you think suffer from some sort of mental illness in your lives. And when we settle on the topic of schizophrenia, both the writer, my director, even Lee Garlington, all of them have someone very close to them in their life who is affected by schizophrenia. And as an actor, one of my biggest concerns was accurately portraying schizophrenia, because there's many, many varying types of schizophrenia, and I didn't want to offend anyone. And so what I did, besides researching numerous amounts of articles and reading books on schizophrenia, talks and presentations by people who have schizophrenia. And then one of the best things that I did was I watched a lot of auditory hallucination schizophrenia simulations, and then I also watched a bunch of visual hallucination schizophrenia simulations. I paused when I said, because that's very big words altogether. But the best thing that I did was listening to those auditory schizophrenia hallucination simulations, because I would wear headphones and you go about your daily business. And so I'd be in my house, be doing dishes, laundry, whatever. But then you'd just be bombarded by all these voices in your head coming from both sides of your ears. And the voices could either be demeaning, they could be attacking you, they could just be counting or talking about something completely unrelated. And that made me very uncomfortable, and it was very hard to focus on whatever I was doing. But it really got me in the mindset of Liam, because 90% of what you see in Broken takes place inside Liam's head. So a lot of it is auditory hallucinations with a bit of visual hallucinations as well.
Yeah, and obviously the sound's got to be important in terms of that as well. I mean, to be able to have a sound design that, you know, kind of almost mimics what goes on as well. And I mean, on set, was it a situation where you kind of had to kind of imagine that those voices were in there, or, you know, kind of tell me a little bit about that process.
You know, it's actually a combination of the two. So there would be times where Liam is talking to himself and he's seeing himself. We're sitting directly across from each other. Obviously, I'm not a twin, so I had to do both. We would do one setup and then flip. So I would either be talking to myself, pause, or someone would be reading my lines off camera, which is a little difficult because, you know, they're not either using they're not an actor. They're usually a PA or someone just feeding you lines just so you can have the ability to react. But then at other times, no one would be in the room with me because we would be on a Steadicam, and the Steadicam would be circling around me, and I'm in a state of confusion, and I'm looking around because I'm hallucinating, but it's popping from here to there to there to there. And so I would be saying my lines, and then very faintly from the distance, someone would be responding to me. So it was a little bit of a challenge as an actor, but that's also part of the fun of being an actor, is dealing with those situations. Because, I mean, how crazy is that? Isn't that just so weird to even be talking about it right now and be like, oh, yeah, this is what I did and blah, blah, blah. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, it's really interesting just to kind of see the kind of the mindset. And I was talking to Naomi about that. It's just the mindset that an actor goes through on certain roles as well, and kind of diving into you know, the quirks and the, you know, and, you know, some of the things that go into playing somebody absolutely different than yourself. You know, it's just, it's absolutely amazing to be able to have that ability and to kind of play around with kind of roles like this as well. So, I mean, it's amazing to be able to have that, you know, obviously you've done it so well that, you got an Emmy nomination, which, you know, not very many actors get that opportunity. So it's great to be able to see that as well.
No, not all. Absolutely.
Now, where can people see Steve Broken? You said it's on Vimeo and the website, correct?
Yes. So our personal website that is hosting all six episodes of Broken, it's short form series, so they range in time from about 6 minutes to 9 minutes, so you can knock it out all in once. It is www.brokentheseries.com.
So yeah, definitely check that out, guys. Any other projects coming up for you?
You know, this time for me is so crazy, and I am enjoying every minute of it. And I am doing things and will be doing things that I could only have imagined a month ago before I received this Emmy nomination. So I've met a lot of people and met a lot of producers, directors at all the free consideration events. And even after my Emmy nomination, I'm getting phone calls. People are reaching out to me who never would before. So the opportunities right now are they're open, and I'm excited. And there are a few things, but of course I can't say anything. Nothing is signed, nothing is for sure, and I don't want to jinx anything because it's still foreign to me. I'm not like Naomi. I didn't come off of American Horror Story. I am essentially a no-name who all of a sudden has one of the highest honors in television, an Emmy nomination. And so I'm dealing with it, and it is so fun, and I love it.
Well, I mean, that's great. I look forward to being able to hear what else is, you know, going on with you. Maybe we'll have you on a little bit later on this year, maybe, and see what kind of pops up, if there's anything that you get to you can promote for us. That's 100%. You know, fingers crossed on that as well. Any social media out there for you?
Yes, so I am a millennial, but I am not the best at social media, so I've been yelled at by that. So I'm working on it, but all of my handles are just at Miles Tagmeyer. So that is Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I'm becoming more social and involved, and I'm starting to like it, which is bad, because before I was like, oh, I don't like social media, but now I'm really getting into it, so I might be addicted.
Yeah, and that's Tagmeyer. So you guys can
yeah,
check them out there as well. Miles, you know, best of luck to you on the Emmy nomination. I really hope you do win it. And, you know, congratulations on all the success. You know, you're basically the Chance the Rapper of the Emmy Awards this year. You know, just, you know, proving that really quality entertainment doesn't necessarily have to come from a big studio. And, again, I look forward to possibly talking to you later in the future. And best of luck to you coming up in the rest of the year.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It was really nice talking to you, too.
And no problem at all, Miles, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye.
Bye. That was Miles Tagmeyer, everybody. You can check him out at Miles Tagmeyer on all the social media. Please go brokentheseries.com. Watch it. It is an Emmy-nominated series, so you guys get to see it as well. So you know it's quality entertainment as well. Last but not least, we've got one of my favorite guests on the show. I think this is her third time coming on to the show. She's been busy. She's been over on Jimmy Kimmel Live for a couple times this past year. And not to mention that she is currently on the WOW Superstars, Women of Wrestling Superstars, which we had an exciting announcement 2 months ago, I believe, that Women of Wrestling WOW Superstars is going to Access TV. I'm so happy that we're going to be able to see her on Access TV. I love that network. I've always had a great relationship with Access. We have Lana Kinnear, a.k.a. Lana Star, on us with us. How are you doing, Lana?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking some time out. I know you're very, very busy. You've got, like, a bunch of acting gigs, plus you're in school, right?
Yes, currently I'm trying to complete my bachelor's in anthropology.
Well, that's amazing. Yeah, I know quite a few. Actually, I know a friend or two who do anthropology as well. I mean, they're really good girls. One is a friend of a friend of a friend, Julie Kedzie, who's a former fighter and is commentator for Invicta. Her sister is an anthropologist and has been published, so I'm very familiar with that as well. What kind of studies?
Actually, I was just going back to school kind of for fun, and I started taking a few of the classes, and I just really, really enjoyed it, and I actually changed my major to it because I was going for a theater major, and then I was like, you know, there's not that much I can do with it. I might as well change it because I really enjoy this, and I didn't think it'd be something I was interested in. Now I'm just like kind of obsessed and interested in it, but it's a lot of work, like trying to audition and work and go to school, so I've been busy.
Yeah, you actually have been as well. And I was excited. I mean, I work very well with the people over at Access. I've had quite a few of their people, you know, on my show, and you know, I'm both the MMA side and their regular, you know, entertainment side of things. And I was excited when the press release came out that WOW Superstars was being picked up. New Japan Pro Wrestling is currently one of their bigger shows right now. And the problem with New Japan is they don't have female wrestling on it. It's all men. And I was like going, I really would love to see the females kind of, you know, get that little spot in. And now we're going to get that coming in 2019. I mean, how was it for you to hear that announcement and kind of, you know that you're going to be on a network and to be able to have WOW Superstars on a relatively pretty good network?
Oh, very exciting, because we've been waiting a long time to find the right place. And, you know, that New Japan's on there already, so they, you know what they're doing with wrestling, and they have a built-in fan base. And like you said, there's no women on the show, so it's kind of a perfect fit. So we're super excited.
Yeah, I mean, just to see how New Japan has done so well on the network. I mean, they, you know, for a couple of years, they just had the Japanese shows on there. Then they finally realized, wow, we have a really huge fan base here. We're going to bring a live show to San Francisco. And every single time they sell out that show. So I'm really hoping that's what we're going to kind of get when WOW kind of debuts as well. I mean, what are we, and do we have any plans on when, you know, when the tapings are going to start, or, you know, I know you guys have been out of Los Angeles for quite a while. I mean, could we see a more, you know, could we see a WOW Superstars up here in Vegas again? I mean, we haven't had anyone here for a while. I mean, you know, kind of what, you know, do we have a kind of a plan as of now, where the tapings are going to be held?
Well, we're definitely taping October 10th and 11th. At downtown Los Angeles at the Belasco Theater. That's where we've taped some of the other seasons that you can see on WWE.com. And I think they're going to be pretty long shows, so we'll probably get, you know, a few episodes out of them. And then the plan is definitely in the new year. I heard that they want to start touring, so definitely Vegas is going to be on the stop if that happens. Because we had a really good relationship when we were taping before in Vegas at the Eastside Cannery. So who knows, maybe we'd be there again. I don't know, but definitely Vegas is a big market for wrestling. So
it is.
Hopefully
I mean,
see
in,
you
in, then. In just, yeah. Yeah. I mean, easily, because I mean, there's a really good, you know, there's a really good population that are there that are just fans in particular. And then there's, you know, the people that come and fly into Vegas and all that as well. And you guys do have a very dedicated fan base that'll come out to watch some of these tapings. And Vegas is a really relatively cheap place for people to fly into as well. So I look forward to it. I've yet to see you guys live. I've always kind of missed when you guys were in town. And then, you know, whenever I went to LA, I've always kind of missed out, with the exception that you guys had two of your gals, I think it was Kita, that was wrestling at a Glory event that I happened to be covering as well.
Stephanie.
I mean, that was the only time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I could have. Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
I wish I was able to see that. I heard that was really good, and I saw on Twitter that you'd mentioned that you were going to be at that. I wish I could have made it.
Yeah, well, I was able to take quite a few Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying, I think it was really different for them, like wrestling in that kind of ring as opposed to the regular wrestling ring. The MMA ring is a lot different with there's no bounce or anything.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and I was able to take a couple photos as well, which was nice, too, because I was really – I had a really good seat. I was almost towards ringside, you know, just taking pictures. You know, I was there for obviously with the kickboxing, but you know, to be able to be there, be able to watch it. So that was my only chance, the first chance I ever got to be able to watch some of the WOW superstars in action. So hopefully that'll change coming up next year once we start to get the tapings going as well. I mean, that's, like I said, it's really exciting to be able to see that as well. And do you know if Access is going to probably show some of the older episodes possibly as well, to kind of get the fans kind of intrigued into, you know, what you guys do?
Yeah, I don't know that. Like, I really hope that they do, because there's a lot of really good storylines and, like, that are going into, like, when we start taping with them. So it would be really good if people, you know, could catch up. But you can view a lot of that on our website. They're up there now, WOWE.com. And I think not season one, but I think maybe 2 through 4 are on there right now. And that would be a good place for people to start.
Yeah, definitely go out and check it out so you can kind of see what's going on, and it'll help you warm you up to the new season that's coming up next year, which is absolutely great. And yeah, it'd be interesting to see once the dates and everything kind of gets settled up for October. To go out and see a couple of the live tapings as well. So definitely check that out. Now, like I said, you've been really, really busy in terms of, you know, that obviously, you know, WOW has its own little season and all that as well, but you've been acting your butt off a little bit as well. I mean, several appearances on Jimmy Kimmel Live, which, you know, how was the reaction for people to see you on Jimmy Kimmel?
It was all good. I mean, the first time it came out, I think people were like, thought it was like a little bit shocking and surprising and funny, but I got a good response from it, and I love working with them. It's very fun day, and they're so nice, like all of their crew and the directors, and it's pretty amazing. They come up with these things like in the morning, because they're, news will break the night before, and so their writers come up and write that morning, and then you go in and shoot it, and you do it in like 3 hours, and it airs that night. So it's such a quick turnaround. They're like super talented, so it's been really fun. I've been on there like 4 times this season, so I hope they call me in for more, because I've been kind of playing like the Stormy Daniels character, so hopefully she keeps herself in the news.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's great. You know, and it's great to have that relationship like that. You know, if the writers really like you, then, you know, and having you on multiple times, it just means that they really certainly do like you. So, and just been hearing, I'm a fan of the Adam Carolla podcast, and just hearing what the writers are like, you know, and Jimmy's, you know, with Jimmy and all that as well. I mean, I hear nothing but good things about that, you know, and how creative his writing staff is as well. So it's, you know, I will suspect that you'll be getting a call once in a while from them. I think they're pretty happy with you. I mean, it's great to be able to do it. I mean, especially you're doing a little bit of comedy as well. I mean, you know, that's always fun. Must be fun for you to be able to do a little bit of comedy. It's kind of out of your a little bit out of your wheelhouse usually. I mean, I'm pretty sure WOW gives you a little bit of comedy, but it must be a lot of fun just to play around a little bit.
Oh, definitely. That's what I like the best, and like doing comedy. And the directors are very like nice. They're like, oh, if you have a suggestion, go ahead, and they'll tape something that you came up with. Like, I did one episode where it was supposed to be Easter, and it looked like I was like smoking a cigarette, and we did it where I was like, well, what if I just have it like drop out of my mouth and this way? And they ended up using the take where I suggested it, and I was like, man, that's really cool. Like, and they're like, oh, we used the one that you suggested. And I'm like, they're just like really nice people. And it's a really fun environment. And I see why, you know, Jimmy Kimmel's been on the air for so long, because I think everybody's super happy working there.
Yeah, you know, he seems like a really fun guy. I've heard nothing but good things about that as well. I mean, Jimmy's great as well. One thing I've got to ask you about, because I haven't talked to you in a while. Now, there was a TV series, I wish it would have been picked up for a second season. It only went one season. I believe it was on Showtime, Roadies, which was really, I thought it was a really good prep. Well, I mean, you know, what was it like for you to be on set for that? I mean, they had some really talented actors a part of that show.
Oh, yeah. I was so excited to book that show. And I was going to be playing the wife of one of the main characters. So I was really excited for season two to come because I would have had more of a reoccurring role, and it didn't get picked up. So that was disappointing. But yeah, there was a lot of great actors like Luke Wilson and Luis Guzman, who was my husband on the show. And then there was, you know, all the producers and directors are all like huge. So that was pretty cool. That was a really good set. I wish that more had come out of that. But I just recently worked on another show. It's called Now Apocalypse, and it's going to be coming out on Stars in 2019. So I just had a little part on that. It's kind of a show for, I'd say, like late teens to early 20s, and it's very interesting. I think it'll be cool to watch, but I played a stepmom on it, so that's something I did recently, and I'm just looking for more acting jobs.
Yeah, on the side of studying and all that as well. I mean, how far off are you with your degree? I mean, how long do you think you got until you get your bachelor's?
Like two more years.
Two more years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm taking it slow. Like, I take, you know, sometimes I'll take like a winter semester off. Sometimes I only take one class a semester, so it's been very long. So that 2 years is kind of thinking. Like,
I'll have to tag you. Yeah, well, I'll have to tag you with my friend who's the anthropologist. So if you have any questions, you can ask her. She's brilliant. Like I said, it's kind of great to be able to have had you as a guest for the past couple of years, just to see what you've been doing and all that as well. And I know you've been grinding it out in Hollywood, doing these small roles, but you've been doing some really great roles as well. So it's great to be able to see that as well. And of course, with the success of WOW, I think things are going to pick up in 2019. I think once that demand comes up, you know, maybe we'll see you a little bit more active as well. So it's great to be able to see that as well. Anything else going on with you right now? Any other projects going on?
No, right now I just finished that role last week, and now I'm on to back to auditioning, and I have a couple of like short films that are coming out that just wrapped, and just, you know, doing this thing, getting ready for WOW, and we're going to start taping a lot of the segments before we start shooting the live events, you know, for the backstage stuff and like the promos. And so that's always exciting and fun, and to see all the people, and I'm looking forward to that. So I'll be busy with WOW a lot coming up soon.
Yeah. Now we don't know. Tickets aren't on sale yet. Are they?
They actually are. They are available for the Belasco show. I think you can see it on our website that I mentioned, WOWE.com. And I think there's some pre-sales on there right now. If
so
not, maybe I can
out.
Find a link and I'll put it on my social media.
Yeah, exactly. So, definitely check that out as well. I mean, it's, you know, if you're in the LA area, it's well worth, you know, where you're going to be watching a couple of episodes. So you'll have a nice little run going on in terms of that, and you'll have a lot of fun because it's, if you guys have seen Glow, the series on Netflix, or, you know, I was a fan of Glow back in the day, it's mm-hmm. it's a really fun show. It's fun just to be able to watch as well. So, you know, if you want to find tickets or, you know, want to catch up with Lana, at WOW_LanaStar on Twitter. You guys can check it out there, and I'm pretty sure she'll tweet out when tickets are where tickets are on sale, and make sure you guys check that out as well. And then WOWE.com, you guys can check out there as well and just catch up on some of the old episodes and kind of see what you guys have been missing in terms of that as well. And like I said, I'm excited that Access TV is going to be pick up. Like I said, I've had a really great relationship with Access for the past couple years, and they always bring some really good quality product out there as well. So definitely check that out as well. Is there anything else, Lana, you want to add?
Oh, I just want to thank you for having me on. You're always one of my favorite shows to go on. So I just wanted to say thank you. And
I can
also check out my Lana Star Instagram. It's wow_LanaStar. Or my Facebook is wowlana.
So definitely check all those places out as well. And maybe you'll get some behind the scenes on the Instagram as well. And it's always a pleasure, Lana. I really hope when you hit the Vegas shows, I'm going to try to make it a top of my priority on my list to be able to be there for the Vegas shows when you get out here again. So
I hope.
Yeah,
so.
You know, I really do, because we have yet to meet in person, but you know, it's always been a pleasure having her on the show. Like I said, I think this is our third time that you've been on the show. And definitely we'll have to get back with you come next year right before the show premieres, definitely, and kind of catch up and, you know, see what's going on there.
That'll be awesome.
Okay,
thanks
a lot, Lana, and best of luck to you in your studies.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Lana Kinnear, everybody, or AKA Lana Star. You guys can check her out, Lana Star, on WOW Lana Star on most social media platforms. You guys can check that out as well. Great to be able to have her on the show. Like I said, Access TV has just been killing it lately. You know, I'll definitely try have to reach out to the PR people over at Access to get a couple more people on. I know Eddie Money, who was a guest on our show a couple times, has his own reality show on Access TV. I was going to try to get him on right before it, but I didn't get an opportunity to do so due to complications. So, you know, we'll work on some stuff with Access. I think I want to start getting more Access TV people on this show as well. Great to have had Naomi on and Miles on. Both very inspirational stories, you know, both really great actors, and you know, they both got Emmy nominations. It just shows you how great they are. So definitely check out Naomi Grossman on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, and Miles Tagmeyer on all those as well. Miles W. Tagmeyer, I think it was what he had said. So guys, check that out as well. Next week, I don't know. I'll let you know within next week, next day or so, who will be on the show. Time usually is 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. And I will say that we're going to try to do that train show. As it turns out, I'll be on another trip, and I have a voucher for a train ticket. So it'll be a Sunday night in September. If I don't pre-record something, I'll have something live, you know, just hinging on that as well. So I'm going to tease that. So we will have a train show. I know I was going to do one last month, but you know, things happen. I had to change up my travel plans, but this time around we should be able to do it. We'll have a live, hopefully a live train show on September. I believe it's September the 15th. It'll be a Sunday. You guys will be able to. I'll have more about that in the next coming weeks. But we're one of the few podcasters I've ever done a podcast on the train. And I want to do that again. This was something I've done, 5-6 years ago. We actually did I think 2011. So yeah, it must have been 7 years ago that we did a show on a train. And I want to redo that act. So that'll happen in September. So I'll let you guys know more information as that becomes available. Guys, like I said, check us out at SWIV on Twitter, at SWIV, and Somewhere in Vegas on Facebook. Definitely check us out there as well. And we'll talk to you guys next week, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, on Monday. Like I said, we'll have an announcement about who's going to be on the show in the next couple of days. So if you check out my Twitter, they usually post right there as well. With that in mind, thank you guys for joining us. We'll talk to you guys next week.